flow.
Just a hair after 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Time once again now for Talking Animals, KUCI. This is music from Khaki King, brand new, with a piece called My Insect Life, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org, and the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards, is broadcasting. From the University of California at Irvine. Home, lest we forget, I don't think we really could, but just as a friendly reminder, home of the Anteaters. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom, Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI, and I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. Come on, call us. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. You can also instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger. Screen name is Talking Animals. Other good, if less immediate, ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@aol.com. And checking out our website, talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. Through which you can also contact us. All right, so options aplenty. Before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rousing, rip-snorting rendition of The Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean, for that matter, by visiting our nifty website, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. And clearly the heart of the program, as you can see, or if you know from listening in the past, is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Gene Bouston, co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary, the nation's largest farm animal rescue and protection organization. They've been around the better part of 20 years and have major shelters in upstate New York as well as in California, and do a lot of programs and campaigns and actually help with adoption of abused and neglected farm animals, some of which they take into their shelters, but some of which, if you meet the criteria, can be adopted out to you, perhaps. So they've done a lot of good work, and look forward to really speaking to Gene Bouston later and hearing all about that when he joins us here in a few minutes, Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, observations, and of course any stories you might have spotted. That all be most welcome. Number once again, 949-824-5824. Or looking at your keypad both differently and the same, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting and or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. Then you'll have to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements, upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. All right, no pussyfooting around. Let's just talk turkey, as it were. And a slight on or two, nod at least, to Farm Sanctuary. Well, it's unlikely this could be. We haven't really gotten that far into the show, but we do notice there's a caller. What the heck? Let's give it a try. Hi, you're on the air live on KCI. It's Talking Animals. All right. Well, as we suspect, doesn't make sense right now. It's a little too early, but we'll be asking a quiz question momentarily, and we have a name and an animal tune later, and of course, always urge people to call in to speak with our guests. So there would be reasons to call in, just maybe not right this moment, but again, we welcome calls at any point. We love them. All right, so produced as always by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, lots of animal news this week. Some of it's rather odd and shocking, and some just interesting and notable, and some stuff in between, I guess. I don't see how we can start with anything but the awful chimp attack story. Taking this from a combination of USA Today and AP. Investigators said Friday they're still trying to figure out how two chimpanzees that viciously attacked a visitor in an animal sanctuary escaped from their cages. The chimps chewed off St. James Davis's nose and severely mauled his genitals and limbs Thursday before the son-in-law, the sanctuary's owner, shot the animals to death, authorities said. Davis, 62, and his wife had gone there to visit another chimpanzee that had lived with them for decades before they were forced to give the animal up. Well, Donna Davis was bit on the hand. quote, a big part of the investigation will be figuring out whether the sanctuary owners were in compliance with regulations, Sheriff's Commander Hal Chelander said. There's a reason why those chimpanzees got out. It will be crucial for our investigation how they got out. Health authorities were testing the dead chimps for rabies and other diseases. The Davises were at Animal Haven Ranch in a canyon 30 miles east of Bakersfield to celebrate the birthday of Mo, a 39-year-old chimpanzee who was taken from their suburban Los Angeles home in 1999 after biting off part of a woman's finger. The couple had brought Mo a cake and were standing outside his cage when Buddy and Ollie, two of the four chimpanzees in the adjoining cage, attacked St. James Davis, said Steve Martorano, a spokesman for the State Department of Fish and Game. Mo was not involved in the attack. Dr. Maureen Martin of Kern Medical Center told KEGET-TV of Bakersfield that the monkeys chewed most of Davis's face off and that he would require extensive surgery in an attempt to reattach his nose. Chandler told him in Bakersfield, California, that the chimps also tore off Davis's testicles and foot. Davis was taken to Loma Linda University Medical Center where he underwent surgery. The hospital would not release any information on his condition. Subsequently, I mean, obviously it's a really, really serious set of injuries this guy sustained, but subsequent reports certainly that he's, you know, going to survive, but a long, long, you know, recovery road and other rehabilitation steps along the way. Meanwhile, this story continues. Primate experts said that chimpanzees, which typically weigh between 120 and 150 pounds, are much stronger than humans, are known to kill chimps from neighboring groups, hunt other primates, and even attack humans in the wild. Quote, this episode highlights some of the dangers of privately owning primates, says Steve Shapiro, who studies chimpanzee behavior at the University of Texas. When you maintain large, strong animals in captivity, you think you know what they're going to do, but in the end, they're unpredictable. Animal Haven Ranch has held state permits to shelter animals since 1985 and serves as a sanctuary for animals that have been confiscated or lost. So, let's pray for the best recovery for Mr. Davis possible, but really a wild story, and I think there's still a lot to be sorted out, obviously, on how they did get out, those chimps who attacked him. So, meanwhile, on the other coast, as it were, this is from both ABC News Online and the Associated Press as well, 19 dolphins that became stranded off the Florida Keys have died, including 13 who were euthanized, officials said Friday. More than 30 others will be moved to rehabilitation facilities Saturday. The dolphins were euthanized after blood tests showed 13 of them are not likely to recover at all and that they were suffering, said Laura Engleby, a biologist with the National Marine Fisheries Service. Quote, some are still not swimming on their own and they couldn't hold themselves up, Denise Jackson of the Marine Mammal Rescue Team said. More than 60 rough-toothed dolphins beached themselves Wednesdays, on flats and sandbars, about a quarter mile off Marathon. Rescue teams moved the dolphins to a nearby canal where veterinarians have been conducting medical tests. The remaining 31 live dolphins were being given a Pedialyte, a drink normally given to dehydrated human babies, and fresh water. Teams plan to move them by Saturday morning to rehabilitation facilities along the Keys, which they've since done, by the way. And marine mammals may become stranded when they are sick, injured, or disoriented, Engleby said. Some scientists perform a necropsies will take genetic samples to determine whether the dolphins all came from the same population. Rough-toothed dolphins normally inhabit deep waters in the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic Ocean. Again, meanwhile, since this story was published, put online, seems to be some possibility that a Navy submarine and its sonar may have played at least a role in these dolphins becoming confused, disoriented, etc., with their own sonar. So again, find out more about that. Keep you posted, of course. This is a story that I meant to get to last week. We ran out of time, but fairly horrifying, really. Luckily, I don't think there's been that many instances, but just that this could happen at all, it seems like we should certainly get it on the animal news segment. So this actually is dating from New Orleans. Rocking your baby to sleep in a mechanical swing may trigger a deadly attack on the child by the family dog, a coroner warns. At least two such deaths have been documented in Maryland over a four-year period, Dr. Albert True of the state's medical examiner's office said Wednesday at a meeting in New Orleans of the American Academy of Forensic Scientists. The back-and-forth motion may activate the dog's instinct to chase prey, he said. Quote, think about dogs chasing cars or tennis balls. They can't control their behavior. They just go, he said. 2003, a two-week-old boy was dragged from a swing and killed by the family's pit bull in Baltimore after the baby's mother left him to answer the door. In Edgemere, Maryland, in 1999, a three-month-old boy was mauled to death as his parents slept. Associated Press, check of online news articles have had at least one other more death, that of an 18-day-old girl in Tampa in 2000 after her mother left the room to warm a bottle for her, and at least two non-fatal attacks around the country in the past few years. So, those swings are certainly instrumental, crucial, pivotal for some of us with whippersnappers. At least they were. We didn't have dogs in the household, so never even had this concern. But really important to keep in mind, I guess, just even if it's statistically very small, which apparently it is, still important to know, keep in mind. All right, it's time now for our mid-news, maybe beyond mid, but still. Quiz question. Again, this week we're sticking with the true-false format, so even if you're calling to guess, you got a 50% chance. And the way this works is I'll read a question. If you know the answer, you will call in 949-824-5824. 949-UCI-KUCI. And if you are the first person to call in with the correct answer, you will get your choice of a number of prizes. From the DVD by Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. We've got books, including Meatless Meals for Working People, Shirley MacLaine's book. Got a copy of a book from people who've been guests on the show, but also one coming who hasn't yet been on the show, a really cool book called Providence of Sparrows. And we've got cat toys, we've got dog collars, we've got t-shirts from various animal organizations, including Paws. We've also got a number of items from the Talking Animals merchandise collection. Talking Animals t-shirts, Talking Animals sweatshirts, Talking Animals coffee mugs. All free, if you're the first person, well, I mean, one of those many gift prizes would be your choice. If you're the first person to call in with the correct answer on this quiz question. And again, the reason we're going into some detail there is because that all this still would, of course, apply later in the show when we play Name That Animal Tune. If you're the first person to call in with the correct answer to that, again, all these prizes you may choose from for one that you could take home. All right. So, here we go. True or false? And again, sort of chosen with the Farm Sanctuary and our guest Jean Bastin and mine. Only male turkeys gobble. Females make a clicking sound. True or false? 949-824-5824 949-UCI-KUCI. Continuing with the news, the heavy rains wreaked all kinds of havoc. Slash go around again, just like the one a month or so ago. But, some of the things that are less obvious that it also did. Well, let's read a bit of this. This is from the LA Times last week. The winter's record rains have created prime breeding conditions for mosquitoes, prompting health officials to warn of a potentially serious outbreak this year of the deadly West Nile virus that killed 27 people in the state last year. One human case of the disease was confirmed in Los Angeles County this year, though just when the virus was contracted was unclear. Health officials said that victim is recovering. In the past week, the virus has been found in two dead birds in Los Angeles County, a chicken in San Bernardino County, and mosquito larvae from a pool of stagnant water in Orange County. These findings indicate that the heavy rains have started the spread of the virus earlier than last year, health officials said. "What we know, it's in the mosquitoes, and that's the closest thing to getting it into the humans," said Mike Hurst, an Orange County Vector Control District spokesman. Health officials won't speculate on a potential human toll this year, but they said the risk of infection increases with higher rainfall levels because pools of standing water are mosquito breeding grounds. You have a better chance of getting bitten this year because of the increased breeding conditions, says Rosanna Westmoreland, a spokeswoman for the California Department of Health Services. So, yet another byproduct of the insane record-setting rains. And we might have time for one more item. Actually, looks like somebody might have a guess on our quiz question. Let's see. Let's see, shall we? Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals.
Is that false?
Well, no, it's not, actually.
Oh, okay.
You had a 50% chance, sadly. Only the male turkeys do gobble.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, that was short and sweet, I guess. But thank you for calling. Thanks for playing the game. And keep listening and try again next week.
Okay, good show.
Thanks, bye. All right, well, there you go. But maybe, you know, maybe she or someone else will call in later with a guess on Name That Animal Tune. I think we've selected one that, you know, is fairly straightforward to get. Anyway, just going to add maybe time for one more item, maybe more, if we speak swiftly. But many, many months ago, very early in the show's life here at Talking Animals, we had one of our guests was Dr. Sophia Yin, who had done some pioneering research on dog barks and what they're communicating. And really fascinating, and she actually put me through a game where I had to sort of, after she explained things, determine what the dogs were communicating. And I think I did pretty well in the game, which was shocking to everyone. But anyway, so now there's kind of a new development on the Dr. Sophia Yin front. There is her treat and train dog training system has kind of hooked up with Sharper Images stores. And so the treat and train, actually she co-invented it, I guess, with Sharper Image, is designed for decreasing barking, jumping, and other unruly behaviors that dogs exhibit when guests come to the door. Unlike most other training devices, the treat and train focuses on positive reinforcement and is backed by two research studies. The system includes a remote-controlled kibble dispensing device, which allows owners to reward dogs as they are performing the correct behavior, and a 3.5-hour entertaining instructional DVD and instructional manual. And sure enough, I got this kind of release or email, and then, you know, happened to see a Sharper Image, the new, Sharper Image catalog, and on the front page, lo and behold, there's the treat and train, with a very cute dog, puppy, looking at it, and so it's pretty interesting. And then when you open the catalog, the very first two pages, a huge spread all about the treat and train and how it works and all about Sophia Yin and Dr. Yin, I should say. And again, who's at the UC Davis Vet School, but she teaches and writes books and trains people, dogs privately and all kinds of other stuff. So anyway, very cool. And quickly, because I want to get this in, just want to give this at least a couple of plugs, if not more, between now and the event. So petabuse.com, I remember we had Allison Giannotto on the show some months ago, and she's going to be on with us again to talk further. Sadly, there's so much to talk about in terms of pet cruelty and abuse that we decided to divide that into two programs. But anyways, petabuse.com will be holding its first ever fundraising event, Pause for Laughter, of course that's P-A-W-S, Stand Up Against Animal Cruelty. It's a stand-up comedy show, including a snazzy raffle, it says here, with some neat prizes at the Escondido Country Club on April 6, 2005. Comedians include Karen Rontowski, headliner, national headliner, and the evening promises to be loads of fun. If you're interested, you know, you can pass on this info to other animal advocates who might be. The website address is pause, P-A-W-S again, for laughter.com. So check it out. So good cause, great thing. If you can get there, even if you can't, maybe you can send a few bucks their way. Well, we had other news items aplenty, actually. It was, again, a big week, but that may be all we have time for, because we do want to get into the comedy corner and then welcome our guest, Gene Bowston. So, if there's ever any news items, animal news items, that you'd like to call to our attention, email us those at talkinganimals@aol.com. And same with any suggestions, comments, music, animal songs, suggestions of animal comedy, etc. So, anyway, it's time now really to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Eddie Izzard with the first minute of the piece simply called Birds on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
Oh, yes, human beings. Yes, we value ourselves pretty highly. But there are other animals that do amazing things. And we just sort of skip over this. Like birds. Birds fly. This is an amazing thing. When you're a kid, you really appreciate it. Until you see one bird fly into a window, then you go, ah, live in the sky, die in a window. Yes. whereas we just get in planes and go straight into a cliff or something, you know, which is much more healthy. But anyway, birds do an amazing thing. Every winter they fly south for their holidays, and they don't get permission. They do it by ESP. They're all calling all birds, calling all birds. We've got a mouse outside Mrs. Stevens' house. She's recently seen Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, so it should freak her out something. Bring your hooded look with you. Oh yes, we've chosen Greece this year for our holidays, you'll be pleased to know. Please bring suntan cream, especially you robins, you always get terribly burnt. And they all mass up, all the birds, looking mean. We were extras in the film, yeah. And they're ready to fly. But then one bird must know when to go. And he goes, whoosh! And they go, it's Steve the Bird, follow Steve the Bird. And they all shoot up in formation, but they don't get to Greece for about a couple of days. They fly round and round and round and round. And if you're 60 birds back in formation doing this, you must go, who the fuck's flying this year? Not Steve the Bird, is it? He's terrible.
All right. That's Eddie Izzard. With the first minute or so of a piece called Birds, taken from his album Unrepeatable, the Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way as we speak. Some of you perhaps arrived there through our small website, talkinganimals.net. So, I'm obliged to remind you at this point that the opinions and views expressed in Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. And having said that, I'll now say this. Earlier in the show, I mentioned this week's guest is Gene Bowson, co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary, the nation's largest farm animal rescue and protection organization, and been around the better part of 20 years, have major shelters in upstate New York and California, do a bunch of other cool work, campaigns, projects, all of which hopefully we'll hear about momentarily. So let's remind you all of the phone number to join that conversation or ask Gene a question. It's 949-824-5824. And then let's welcome Gene to Talking Animals. Are you there, Gene?
Yes, hello. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
My pleasure.
You know, there's so much ground to cover about Farm Sanctuary, and I'm actually aiming to cover as much as possible in our time together today. But first, when someone's, you know, runs a sanctuary, has been involved with animal rescue for some time, in your case, you know, a good 20 years or so, I think it's, you know, particularly interesting and instructive to sort of begin by hearing about their history and the path that led them to work with animals. I mean, did you, you know, grow up animals? Were you an animal nut as a kid? Or maybe you could kind of, you know, start us off a little bit with your history.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Hollywood, California, up in the hills, and I remember seeing deer running through the hills, coyotes, skunks, lots of wild animals. And that was sort of my first, image or my first experience with animals. And then when I was about 8, I had a cat who was a very good friend of mine and may have been my best friend at the time, actually. And so, you know, I've always had a sensitivity towards animals. And, as I grew up and learned about the various problems associated with, you know, how animals are raised, and especially in the food industry, it was something that, you know, needed to be dealt with. And there was very little attention being paid to that issue in 1986 when Laurie and I started Farm Sanctuary.
And Gene, was there something, was there a particular incident or something that kind of served as a catalyst to, you know, because again, you had a you know, best friend when you were growing up like that and some of this, but I mean, what kind of propelled you in the direction of farm animals at that point?
You know, I think it was a very sort of rational decision. The fact that so many animals are raised and slaughtered every year in the U.S., the fact that very few organizations or people were paying any attention to this problem, the fact that it is such that it touches so many people's lives in terms of what they eat, and then people become sick because they're eating, you know, meat, milk, and eggs from factory farmed animals that have been raised horribly, so they're sick. The environment is being destroyed. Workers are being exploited. Factory farming touches and harms this planet in so many different ways that it was something that really needed attention. And, I also recall an incident in high school, which was the first time that I considered being vegetarian, and I didn't eat animals for a while after this incident. I came home, and my mother had prepared dinner, and I saw this chicken on the plate, and it was the body of a chicken. And after seeing that, I didn't eat animals for a while. But then I sort of, you know, went back into old habits. And then finally, in the early to mid-'80s, started thinking more about it, and was a vegan by 1985, and, you know, started Farm Sanctuary in 1986.
And so maybe you could just then sort of walk us through the beginning of Farm Rescue and how, you know, you and Lordy kind of took those first steps back then.
Yeah, well, when we started, you know, there was very little written about industrialized farming operations, very little published about what happens on factory farms and the problems with them. So we wanted to see firsthand what was happening, and we visited farms and stockyards. And we would literally find living animals left in trash cans or left on piles of dead animals. So we couldn't leave them there, and we took them home. And at the time, we were in a little row house in Wilmington, Delaware. And we rehabilitated the animals and adopted them out into good homes. And so that's how it started. And what we learned is that, you know, people in the neighborhood were very touched by these animals. The children would come over and look in the backyard and see a sheep or a chicken or a pig or a calf, and they would want to know more about them, and they would want to get close to these animals and connect with these animals, and that's sort of where our education program blossomed from, you
mm-hmm.
know, the way that people were touched by these animals. And so now we have these two sanctuaries, one in upstate New York, one in Northern California, and they're both open to the public, where people can come and see cows and pigs and sheep and chickens and turkeys and rabbits and ducks and geese, all in a positive sanctuary environment, and can relate to animals in this positive sanctuary environment and be inspired by them.
Yeah, and I should kind of quickly point out that you know, among the things that kind of distinguishes farm sanctuaries, that a lot of sanctuaries, at least ones that maybe have maybe more exotic animals, but just generally, for one reason or another, mostly to protect animals that have been through kind of a rough go, don't allow you to visit. So one of the things right away that's very kind of cool and significant about the farm sanctuary is that you can visit, you can connect with these animals and really, you know, get close to them. So
that is very true. And, you know, farm animals, by definition, have been bred and domesticated by people. And, you know, some of our animals, though, are still somewhat wild or don't want to be with people. And we give the animals that freedom and that choice.
Sure.
You know, obviously, because, you know, it's number one, a sanctuary, and then also an education facility. But many of the animals do very much enjoy human company, and so people can go in and be with them, and it's a positive experience for everybody involved.
That's great. And just to back up a little bit, Gene, so, okay, when you and Lori, you know, were kind of first visiting those places and seeing these kind of horrifying things, did your sort of thoughts then, were they like, hey, we've got to create a rescue organization, a shelter sanctuary to help these animals, or more, hey, we've got to do something, we just don't know what it is yet, but let's just keep going down this path, or did you have a more even clear vision even in the earliest days?
Well, you know, in the earliest days, we didn't really have a clear vision of, mm-hmm. you know, 5 years out, 10 years out,
right.
20 years out. We basically just wanted to do what could be done to help.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd find a living animal on a pile of dead animals. We would take them home, nurse
sure.
them to health, and adopt them into a good home. As we continued doing this, it became clear that we needed more space. We
mm-hmm.
needed, you know, a farm.
Sure.
And then we set about acquiring a farm and, you know, continuing and expanding the work. But, you know, Farm Sanctuary has really been an evolution. We have responded to needs as they have arisen. And, you know, it continues to be a very organic, growing organization.
Yeah. And so, Gene, so what would be some pivotal events or projects in the kind of the earliest days? I mean, obviously acquiring the, you know, getting the land, getting the space, getting the farm. But what are some other kind of, as you look back, key steps along the way that were really crucial to the development of you know, what Farm Sanctuary has become?
Well, you know, I think we're a very pragmatic organization, and, you know, we have vision and aspirations for a vegan world, and we encourage people to consider a vegan lifestyle, but we also work to stop cruelty as immediately as we can and wherever we can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Hilda was the first animal we rescued. We found her on a pile of dead animals behind a stockyard in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And, you know, we took her home, took care of her, and then we continued visiting the stockyards and continued seeing problems there. And so in addition to rescuing Hilda and other animals that were too sick to walk or were just left to die at the stockyard, we wanted to prevent these downed animals. That's what the industry calls them, downed animals, because they're so sick they can't stand and walk.
Mm.
We wanted to prevent them from being sold and marketed and transported in the first place. So we tried to get upstream, and we advocated that the stockyard adopt a policy against accepting and marketing these downed animals. So we initiated a campaign against the stockyard, and after lots of public pressure and positive local media in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, the stockyard said they would no longer accept downed animals. So that was a major positive development.
Sure.
You know, however, you know, they were not very good about enforcing their own policy.
Mm-hmm.
So we continued visiting and, in fact, incorporated a Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals in Pennsylvania in order to enforce anti-cruelty laws there. And we had them convicted of cruelty to animals in 1992. First time ever that a stockyard in the U.S. was convicted for mistreating a downed animal.
Wow. That probably got people's attention, right?
Yeah. And then we got a law passed in California also preventing downed animals from being marketed, and we've now had two stockyards convicted of cruelty there. You know, we were instrumental in working with other organizations in an effort in Florida to outlaw the use of gestation crates, which are these two-foot-wide enclosures where breeding pigs are kept for their whole life.
Oh, the pregnant, yeah, sounds, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so that was a significant thing that happened in 2002.
Great.
Yes, so it's, you know, it's an ongoing process.
Sure.
There are, you know, lots of work still to do, though.
Absolutely. Well, a couple things just in what you were saying there. One is that when you talk about sort of really encouraging the vegan lifestyle, I mean, in sort of, you know, researching and brushing up a bit for our talk this morning, it looked like that when people, and we'll get into hopefully a bit of some of the adoption possibilities in a moment, but when it comes to people who might adopt some of the animals through farm sanctuary, or just generally, that you really are pretty emphatic that they at least would embrace a vegetarian lifestyle. Is that a fair assessment?
It's true, yes. We, you know, these animals are going into homes, and we want to be ensured that
yes.
they will live out their lives in a safe environment. So, yeah, we do a very thorough screening of the homes and, you know, place animals in good homes all over the country.
Cool. And then the other thing, too, is that I did want to get into then is, yeah, when you say there's still more work to do, what are some of the things as you look ahead that you feel are kind of either, you know, significant challenges or just projects that you're kind of in the midst of or gearing up for that will continue this trend of kind of victories that you've just outlined for us?
Well, I think the vast majority of citizens still need to be made more aware of what happens on industrialized factory farms in this country. I think that laws need to be strengthened so that certain cruel practices are prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't realize that farm animals are specifically excluded from the Federal Animal Welfare Act, and farm animals are also excluded from most state anti-cruelty laws. So we have a lot of work to do to bring laws more into line with societal values and to prevent some of this most egregious cruelty. And also there needs to be a broader awareness of the fact that human beings do not need to eat meat, milk, or eggs to be healthy. You know, we
mm-hmm.
can, you know, so we need to recognize that it's a choice that each of us has to make, and we encourage people to consider making a vegan choice. So there's a couple tracks. One is people need to be aware and educated about these issues, and I think when that happens, many will decide that it's better not to eat animal products. But on the other side, legislatively, we need to stop some of these most egregious cruelties, you know, by law, through the courts, through litigation, and so on.
Yeah, you know, let me just tell you, this is Talking Animals on KUCI. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm speaking with Gene Fauston, co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary, the nation's largest farm animal rescue and protection organization. To join the conversation, ask Gene a question, please call us at 949-824-5824. You know, when you were talking about the way that farm animals kind of miss being protected, to you know, to the degree that some other animals are, you know, reminds me of a thought I had when I was thinking about, you know, the work that you guys do and some of those exact maybe perception things. I mean, you know, you're a large, long-running, obviously successful, effective national operation, but I'm curious if you feel that you're up against any sort of perception obstacle, meaning like lots of folks are concerned with shelters for dogs and cats, and lots of folks are concerned about shelters and sanctuaries for exotic animals, big cats, elephants, etc. But to what extent do you feel farm animals and shelters for them, or protections, obviously, for them, slip through the cracks if people don't think in those terms?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's a very good point that most people still eat animals, you know, farm animals.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a tendency, I think, for people to become defensive when, you know, these issues are raised and when people have to sort of examine their own behavior and question some of their own assumptions and you know, are confronted with the fact that, you know, maybe some of their consumer habits are contributing to unnecessary animal suffering or are contributing to a variety of other problems associated with the factory farming industry. So I think, and the other thing is that agribusiness in the U.S. and around the world is a multi-billion dollar business, and it's part of our very culture. It's part of our how we relate to other animals, and when we ask people to question that, we're asking them to question some very fundamental assumptions. So you know, I think as awareness is raised and people become more sensitive to these issues, and as people recognize that there are things that they can do that are not that difficult to make a positive difference,
yeah,
I think we will see, you know, increasing action. But, you know, it also boils down to prejudice and discrimination,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that often comes from a lack of familiarity. We have, you know, when we're not familiar with another animal or when we're not familiar with other people, there's a tendency sometimes to draw conclusions and have perceptions of them that are not necessarily very friendly or very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of farm animals, there's an awful lot of prejudice and discrimination out there. And, you know, for instance, people say turkeys are dumb. They drowned in the rain. You know, we've never seen that happen, and we've taken care of these animals for about 20 years now.
Yeah.
And they go inside and outside. We've never seen them drowned in the rain. So that is, you know, a prejudice that people, I think, want to believe because then it justifies they're mistreating these animals.
Yeah, well, and along those same lines, there's such a disconnect. I was trying to flip through your great the Farm Sanctuary 2005 calendar, which, again, by the way, we should let people know you guys have a fantastic website, farmsanctuary.org, and there's lots of great info about, you know, history, some things we've talked about, but campaigns, the shelters, but this calendar, yeah, is fantastic. And the reason I bring up the website now is you could through that website get the calendar. I mean, not that far into 2005, it's still good to get the 2005 calendar. But it's so much great information. I was trying to find. I thought it was in the calendar, but maybe it's elsewhere. But basically, the idea of the disconnect that's, you know, unfortunately often the case, but particularly pertinent here, between people who say they love animals and indeed love animals and they have pets in the home, but then there's a huge gulf between that and then sitting down to eat an animal at dinner.
Absolutely right. You know, we have a bumper sticker that says, if you love animals called pets, why do you eat animals called dinner?
That's what I was looking for. That's the one. Sorry, yeah, I couldn't
yeah.
quite find that here while I was thumbing through. But
it really calls people to ask that question. You know, what is the difference between treating, you know, a dog and a pig, you know, other than we in this country have said the dog is our companion, the pig is our food.
Yeah.
You know, in other countries such as in India, you know, the cow is revered and is not killed and eaten. You know, whereas in this country, cows are obviously
sure.
killed and eaten. So it's something that each person and each society determines. And, you know, we do not need to kill and eat other animals. In fact, we're healthier if we don't.
Right. Gene, it looks like we might have a call from one of our listeners. Do you want to take a question from a listener?
Sure.
Great. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals with Gene Bowston from Farm Sanctuary.
Thank you. I have a question for Gene.
Please, go ahead.
Yes, Eugene, I really applaud the work you do. I'd like to get back to your point for a second about downed animals. I know that the transport of animals such as horses, for example, are pretty barbaric and cruel, and a lot of them are downed, or some of them are downed before they reach their destination. Are you able to do anything about that in terms of the transport companies, the trucking companies?
Well, you know, we have been in touch with trucking companies, but we are also trying to change laws. Because sometimes when you talk to these businesses, you know, they may give you lip service, but what we have found is that voluntary measures generally are not as effective as legal requirements.
I see.
So we do both. We work with the businesses, but we also work with government bodies.
Right, I understand. Well, keep up the good work. It's really marvelous what you're doing. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Along those same lines, Gene, I mean, I just wonder if you find that for a certain percentage, whether it's just, you know, John Q. Public types, Jane Q. Public types, or, like you said just to our caller, that short of something with some legal teeth, that the plight of farm animals, whether it's transporting a horse or just the day-to-day life of a cow, if the plight of those animals isn't sufficiently compelling or isn't, God forbid, sexy enough to rally folks to take action, to, you know, make a donation or to modify their own practices voluntarily, step up, whatever, the way they might, again, if it were a dog who needed help or even an elephant with an awful story. I mean, do you find, again, that there just seems to be a gap there that's hard to bridge?
Yeah, I think that there is, you know, an existing disconnect that people have when it comes to their relationship with farm animals. And I think one of the reasons for that is that there is just not a familiarity and an understanding and an appreciation of these animals.
Yeah.
You know, people who live with dogs and cats get to know them and get to love them and care deeply about them.
Sure.
And that's why we encourage people to visit Farm Sanctuary and get to know the animals and get to pet a cow or a pig or get to watch chickens dust bathing and just get an appreciation of these creatures who we share the planet with. And once we look at them as other creatures that we share with the planet with, who are alive and who want to live and who have their own personalities and their own relationships with other animals, I think that we begin to think differently about whether or not we should eat them, and certainly we should not be abusing them the way we are.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, again, it's so great that people can visit, and again, just to remind people, there's a 175-acre shelter in upstate New York and a 300-acre facility in Northern California, and it sounds like, if I'm not mistaken, I think I read somewhere, are there plans kind of afoot, maybe still down the road, but for some sort of shelter in L.A. at some point, Gene?
Yes, that is correct. We have received a donation in the L.A. area, and we are looking to set up a farm sanctuary in Los Angeles. As you can imagine, L.A. is fairly complex in terms of the different permitting and so on.
Sure.
So we're investigating that right now, and we do anticipate setting up an L.A. sanctuary, hopefully before too long.
That's great. Well, gosh, Gene, we're sort of nearing the end of our time, and I still feel like there's a bunch of things I want to go over with you. But maybe you could touch briefly on, because we mentioned it before, but maybe just to get a few more details about what the possibilities are for adopting an animal through Farm Sanctuary, and just kind of what's asked of people, what's required of them, and what the possibilities really are.
Well, there's a couple of ways people can adopt. They can either sponsor an animal who lives at Farm Sanctuary, and, you know, people can do that by going to the Farm Sanctuary website, farmsanctuary.org, and there's a button that says Shelter Adoptions that people can go to, and then it talks about, adopting an animal through a sponsorship. Again, that's a monthly fee that allows the animal to live here and allows us to care for the animals here. And then there's also home adoption, where people who have space and have the ability to and desire to, are able to bring animals into their own homes and allow them to live out their lives. So we have home adoptions and sponsored adoptions available.
And that's great. What is there sort of, depending, I guess, on the animal, like a certain minimum space requirement that there's like a formula that kind of is worked out, or is it just more like what their actual home and residential setup is like that would determine whether it's practical for them to adopt? Or?
Yeah, I mean, there's a variety of things. One of them has to do with space. You know, if these are cows, for example, they need a good bit of space and need grass to be able to graze on.
Sure.
If they're chickens, they don't need as much space, but they, you know, need to be able to be closed in at night in case there's any potential predator issues.
Sure.
Like raccoons, for example. In the case of sponsored adoptions, that's very easy. You know, the animals live here at Farm Sanctuary.
Sure. That's
home adoptions, we also check to make sure that the adopters have veterinarians available that know how to take care of these animals.
Mm-hmm.
So we're
pretty careful.
It's a pretty thorough check.
Sure, as it should be, yeah. And, Gene, just I guess in our remaining moments, just going to try to hit a few just kind of miscellaneous things, including that coming up this weekend, I think, and this is the kind of thing you guys do regularly, but this the Farm Animal Forum, Advocating for Change in Boston, maybe you could just briefly kind of tell us what that is and how that works.
Yes, we're going to do a forum in Boston on March 13th. We've got a great lineup of speakers. Then on March 14th, we're going to be rallying in front of the state capitol in Boston, urging for the passage of legislation to prevent factory farming cruelties. We've got several efforts underway there. One bill that would ban the use of veal crates and gestation crates. These are very small enclosures where animals are kept for their whole lives, unable to walk or even turn around. So there's an anti-confinement bill we're working on in Massachusetts, and we're also working on a bill to prohibit the inhumane forced feeding of ducks and geese to make foie gras, which is literally translated from French as fatty liver. And these birds are force-fed, so their livers become 10 times larger than their normal size. And needless to say, it causes, you know, numerous health problems and intense suffering. And so there's a couple pieces of legislation we're working on in Massachusetts, and we will be discussing those at the forum in Boston on March 13th and 14th this year.
That's great. And I guess at least one other thing that comes to mind, just because some of our listeners are, of course, in California, though through the Internet they're scattered around as well, but mid-May, May 14th and 15th, there's at the California facility, there's a country hoedown.
Yeah.
So you can hang with animals and others who have interests, and it sounds like it's fun hay rides and speakers and great vegan food and stuff. So anyways,
absolutely,
lots of stuff to kind of stay abreast of, again, through their great website, farmsanctuary.org. I think, sadly, we've just about reached the end of our time, but I really appreciate you joining us, making time to speak with us today on Talking Animals, and we appreciate and applaud all the great work you and Lori and everyone else have done over the years.
Thank you very much, Duncan. It's been my pleasure being with you.
Okay, thanks so much now. Take care.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, again, Gene Bouston, co-founder, vice president of Farm Sanctuary. One more time, the great website, really comprehensive, a bunch of cool stuff, and really neat photos of adoption of the month and, you know, just all kinds of stuff. It's farmsanctuary.org. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI, streaming live on the internet at kuci.org. And it's time to play Name That Animal Tune. It's like any other version of Name That Tune you care to mention, except this is animal-related. So I'm playing a snippet of a tune. There'll be a prize if you're the first person call in. Those prizes we mentioned earlier in the show when we were talking about the quiz item. So if you can call and identify this song correctly and you're the first to do so, 949-824-5824, you'll have a choice of those prizes. It's the Name of the Animal Tune. Talking Animals here on KUCI.
By with my tail in the air. Straight cat, strut, I'm a
well, once again, it's sort of like Who's Buried in Grant's Tomb. We've given you the answer by virtue of the chorus, if nothing else. All right, well, you can still call that in our remaining moments. It's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, if you can name that animal tune. I'm Duncan Strauss. We have reached just about the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed here on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to again thank our guest, Gene Bouston, for joining us on Talking Animals. And again, the website is farmsanctuary.org. Also want to thank you all for listening, for the phone calls we received. Hope you'll join us next Monday, March 14th, when our guest will be in, as yet, unbooked, but thoroughly fascinating, I'm sure, guest. By the way, other great public affairs shows here on KUCI include just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. And then at 5 p.m., we offer Counterspin, Baseball at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan, and that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again for 5 to 6 in the afternoon. And again, I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net, and when you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments about the show, good, bad, or indifferent, guest suggestions. Maybe there's somebody you're aware of that you think we should be interviewing on Talking Animals. By all means, let us know. Along the same lines, any show topics, things that should be in the animal news segment, animal songs, animal comedy bits, anything else you'd like to pass along, it'd all be most welcome. Email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. Seriously, I'm telling you, I do, all right? I do. So please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. It's great, a great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're closing things out here with an animal-related tune. This is Porno for Pyros with Dogs Rule the Night on KUCI. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
This is Knockout Greg from Knockout Greg and Blue Weather, and you're listening to Jeff Scott, infecting you with the blues disease.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? my brother by the year ago. The roll up home, we ain't seen him no more.